Ladies and gentlemen, I think it's Tuesday. When you work 7 days a week this time of year, you just don't even know. You just get up and keep doing it. We're the Football Scoop staff. Great to see everybody. I think we were kind of off the pod for about a week. We had a lot going on, a lot of coaching changes. Something like 27 FBS jobs have opened already. Many of them filled. A couple still to go. It's keeping us busy. I am your host, Scott Rousseau. I got Doug Samuels, Zach Barnett, John Bryce. You know us. This is what we do. Great to have everybody. Gentlemen, today, unscripted, I want to hear quick reactions to some of the big head coaching hires. Reactions, insight, anything you want to go. Feels like if we're doing this, we got to start with Lane Kiffin. LSU wins that Lane Kiffin sweepstakes. Floor's open. Gentlemen, what do you think?
I'll start. Beauty before brains. The thought of the type of receivers that LSU consistently gets, the type of quarterbacks that LSU has been able to bring in, combined with Lane's offense, is scary. And I'm certainly not going to be surprised if we're looking up and LSU's won a national championship within the next 5 years. But Lane strikes me as a guy that wants to put his head down and coach ball and not deal with a whole lot of nonsense. And I think Ole Miss made it easy for him to do that. There's a lot of other stuff that comes with being the LSU head coach. How much of a patience is he going to have for that? And then also, Ole Miss overachieved based on preseason expectations this season. Ole Miss was also the biggest underachiever in college football last season. That team could have won a national championship with the talent they had on campus. They didn't even make the playoff. So Lane's capable of both. Will this? He said that, you know, he just assembled. I'm paraphrasing here, but in this day and age, you have to just assemble a team, and culture comes second. Will he can evolve in that regard at LSU? That's something I'm monitoring moving forward.
I feel like we all had the wool pulled over our eyes with the ESPN special about how much Lane Kiffin has changed and how he's a new person. And I was drinking that Kool-Aid, and I think the departure, leaving Ole Miss for LSU, just shows us it's the same old Lane. He went from kind of a redemption story back to being the villain. And I think, I mean, Zach talks about winning a title in the next 5 years. I mean, heck, if he doesn't win in the first two or three, he probably gets run out of town. So I think in 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, looks back and Lane's like, man, that's another mistake that I made.
I won't pretend to remotely have the pulse on Baton Rouge that Mayor Scott Rousseau has, but I will say I think that Lane Kiffin will be an exponentially better fit than Brian Kelly, while also saying I do think from talking to people down there that BK did some decent stuff culturally, that there's some things in the program that he brought down with him from Notre Dame that maybe have cleaned up just some of the standards in the program, some of the academic things, some of the ways that LSU football players are just expected to carry themselves. So I don't know what Lane will be like with that great of microscope yet again in his coaching career. And while you say that LSU won the Lane Kiffin lottery, I think it's a little bit like Wheel of Fortune. Like, yeah, you're getting that big gold prize, but it might be $100,000 or it might be a cruise to the Bahamas. And there's a big difference in those two.
I agree. Lane's a heck of a football coach, and he's going to have a really good staff. Some of that's still up in the air. I think Lane ultimately winds up winning a lot of football games at LSU. Does he win a national championship or not? That often comes down to offensive line, defense line, and quarterback.
Here's why I say he has somewhat earnestly changed. The old Lane of just a few years ago, the Lane that got kicked out of Alabama before the title game because he was too focused on FAU, he would have brought those coaches with him and never let them go back. At least Lane has come to some accord with Ole Miss, probably realizing that keeping them in Baton Rouge for absolutely no reason at all does nothing but further tarnish his legacy. So I do think that shows some enlightenment from Lane Kiffin.
All right. We can talk about SEC changes a lot and John Sumrall, but let's talk Penn State real fast. Penn State's search was a debacle, but they wind up with a great outcome. And I think a lot of people early on would have said, really possible the search is going to be a mess, but they're probably going to wind up with a really good football coach. And they did. Matt Campbell's a great hire for those guys, in my opinion. He's going to bring a bunch of what he knows. Hecock's coming. They're going to augment that staff with some dudes. And the question is, can he get Penn State over the hump? Gentlemen, thoughts on that?
I mean, he is a guy that did more with less. That's his MO. I think he already loves Penn State. Talked about how his grandparents grew up like 3 hours from campus, I think. I think Matt Campbell is an outstanding hire at Penn State. I think he should have been their second call. Like, I know there was some talk about, yeah, we couldn't get a hold of him as agent, you know, whatever. But I think he should have been the second call right after Kurt Cignetti. I mean, a guy that is going to build an unbelievable culture at Penn State. He's going to make Penn State a destination point for a lot of folks. The question is, can he get an offense rolling? Can he recruit the right playmakers at the receiver spot? Because that's really been Penn State's Achilles heel, is the quarterback spot and having explosive receivers. And he's proven that he can develop guys like a Brock Purdy into an NFL starter. So I'm excited to see what he can do at Penn State.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go, Doug, was James Franklin failed to win big games, and he failed to develop quarterbacks that could go win big games. And on the hoof, you would not take Iowa State's quarterbacks over Penn State's quarterbacks. Penn State settled or centered on guys that looked like future first-round picks, that looked like Drake May clones but didn't play like Drake May. And 7 of the last 8 seasons at Iowa State, their quarterback has been Brock Purdy or Rocco Becht. And, I mean, where would Penn State be? James Franklin would still be Penn State's head coach if you just switched quarterbacks. So, I mean, I think it's hard to see this one not ending up really well.
A pox upon you, Barnett, for stealing my talking points. You have neither beauty nor brains, but I was getting ready to say exactly. Imagine any James Franklin team with as plucky a quarterback as Brock Purdy at any point in time. And Drew Aller tried, but he processed slow. He didn't always shine in the big moments. And so, yeah, initially I thought, especially as this search dragged more than 50 days, I thought there's no way at this point they've been, you know, rejected by everybody on The Bachelor. I thought there was no way that they would make a good hire. And much like Fran Brown's introductory press conference a couple of years ago at Syracuse, I absolutely loved Matt Campbell's introductory press conference yesterday. I thought it was incredibly powerful and incredibly authentic. And there's not a lot of authenticity in this sport these days.
All right, let's talk about a guy who I think has shown so well the past couple of weeks. It's John Sumrall. Florida pivoted pretty quickly. Florida had some conversation with Lane, and then it's kind of clear they weren't going to be the suitor. And they're just like, hey, we're hiring John Sumrall. We're pretty happy. And Sumrall has handled the Tulane being in the playoff, conference championship game, playoff, all that so well. The city of New Orleans loves the guy. I believe, you know, hiring Buster Faulkner and Brad White. I mean, the guy got his two first choices for his coordinators. Feels like Sumrall has an opportunity to do something great. And I'll throw the thing in there that Auburn should have hired him and had the chance to. And Florida stepped in and got their guy.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times we can devolve it into NFL draft coverage where it's like the panelists are gushing after every pick, and it's like, yeah, guys, that could work out, but we all know half of these moves or more will not work out. So I try to play a little bit as a devil's advocate, but I don't have a devil's advocate card to play here. Like I think there's a really good chance we look back at this and it's the best hire of the cycle. I mean, especially Buster Faulkner, bringing him in. He was our Football Scoop Offensive Coordinator of the Year. I mean, you can't not love what he's done offensively. And it's more than just this season. He's as good as anyone at fitting his offense to his talent. So, it's not enough for these schools to just go out and hire a head coach. You have to then go past someone and take someone else's seat at the table to get to where you want to go. And if I'm looking at one school that's really positioned themselves to say, hey, you know, pick your SEC program that's competing for championship. You're out, we're in. It's John Sumrall in Florida. Like, I struggle to see how this does not work out.
I think it's an incredibly strong hire for Florida. I also think Summerall stopped just short of going full Kurt Cignetti by saying, I'm a winner. I liked that. I liked his passion. I've already talked to people with in Gainesville who have said that he's texted them at 2 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, all throughout the day. They don't understand. He's apparently found 28 or 30 hours in the day that none of the rest of us has or wants, by the way. I don't want that. The other thing I think is that, and this is not a knock on his staff at Tulane because he had a hell of a coaching staff at Tulane, but I think he's learned a lesson from Billy Napier about not going into that situation too comfortably. And that's why he's hired a Buster Faulkner. That's why he's hiring directly from outside of his tree. That's not why he's just bringing everything part and parcel over from Tulane. And again, those are great Tulane coaches, and he's going to bring some very key guys with him and already is in the process of doing that. But I like his approach, and I think that Scott Strickland and Florida allowed themselves to be backed into a corner where anybody but Lane Kiffin was going to be viewed as an abject failure. Summerall had the testicular fortitude to step in the trench and say, I'm the guy.
I think that's a great point, John. I think a lot of times these guys that move up from the Group 5 to the Power 4, they bring their whole staffs with them. And you understand why they're the guys that put you in that position to go change your life with that job. But a lot of times, most often, the guys that got you to the job are not the guys that are going to keep you in the job. And so it's not easy to go do that, and credit Summerall for having the fortitude to make those tough decisions.
Authenticity always wins out, and I loved the college football playoff, and credit to Florida for allowing Summerall to stay with Tulane through their run. But I loved turning on the college football playoff selection show and seeing Tulane announce and Summerall just grinning ear to ear, looking over the room, looking over all those dudes in the room. You know, many of them he helped recruit or inherited. And you can tell he loves that place, and I think Florida is going to be better for that. Again, to everyone else's point, his coordinator hires were big, and I think especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think, and it's early on, but we're going to look back, and this is one of the best offensive coordinator hires of the cycle, and it's super early.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's familiar with what Buster Faulkner has done with Haynes King. Haynes is a unique talent, but Buster has tailored his offense to what Haynes does well, and Haynes does a lot of things well, especially quarterback up the middle. But Buster's kind of a throw it around the yard type guy. He ain't afraid to challenge. You know, Steve Spurrier's gonna be pretty happy with Buster Faulkner. Let's leave it at that. All right, so John Summerall was tailor made to be the Auburn head football coach. And Auburn did not get that deal done, but they got Alex Golish. Alex Golish is a dude. He's a hardworking human. He has figured it out and did great as South Florida. South Florida, nobody wanted a piece of South Florida early before a couple of injuries got to him. They you know, got Alabama, scared Alabama. Alex Golish at Auburn, I think, is a very good hire. I think they're going to put in the work. I think DJ Durkin won that team over, and they were thrilled to be able to retain DJ. And I think Alex winds up being a very stabilizing, gets Auburn back to that 9-win, 10-win in competition for every game dogs, people you don't want to have to play going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Auburn, you don't need to make wholesale changes. Like, if this team was coached differently from January through September, then they're not 5-7. This is a 9-3 team that went 5-7. So you just need a different set of hands on the wheel. You don't need to change the engine and the body of the car.
Golish is known for the deep choice. Like that's their go-to from kind of the Art Briles tree. And Cam Coleman is going to be an absolute monster in that offense. Like, he was already one of the toughest receivers to match up with, and now to give a dude that's 6'3 and runs like an absolute machine on that deep choice stuff is going to be electric on the Plains. It's going to be awesome. And I know he's brought a bunch of his offensive staff together. Being able to keep DJ Durkin there is huge. So to watch that team is going to be a ton of fun come the fall.
Yeah. America, the greatest country, college football, the greatest sport. You want to know why? Because a native of Moscow, Russia is now coaching a head coach in the Deep South SEC. Alex Golish, native of Moscow, Russia, who didn't play college football, is an SEC head football coach. Come on, this is going to be a 30 for 30 or a full-blown damn movie. It's going to be all of it. And I do think they will score a lot of points. If you look and see, Josh Heupel and Tennessee have not been as effective without Alex Golish by far. Even though they made the playoffs a year ago, they were not as good offensively as what they did the first couple of years with Golish there. I don't think that's an accident. I think he's an incredibly elite offensive mind. How they stay unified, how they fortify the defense, and how Durkin adapts to having a much faster offensive pace that he's going to have to tailor his defense around, I think are going to be keys. It's a very nice hire. It's not the top hire in the cycle at all for me.
You got to keep Cam. Cam's a difference maker, and Auburn needs to find the economics to ensure they lock him up. Okay, Kentucky goes Will Stein. I love that. New life. I think Mark Stoops is a very good football coach. It has just gotten stale. The offense was atrocious. It's ready. They pulled the plug. The economics weren't huge for the new staff, so they can pay off Mark, and it all works out. And I think this is good positive steps for Kentucky's future. I don't know that year one, the numbers are huge. I think year two, year three, they start to see a nice build for Kentucky.
Yeah, I think Stein is already making some nice hires there. I think probably Kentucky is seeing, even though he's a much more mature coach, I think Kentucky is probably seeing what Jeff Brohm has done in very short order at his alma mater, and they've grabbed another Louisville former quarterback that I think has a similar trajectory upward as a head coach, and that's what Kentucky is hoping to do. So I really like the hire. I give Kentucky credit for getting it done in short order because it had been made clear, especially again, like we talked about after that win at Auburn, that Mark Stoops wasn't going anywhere. And then they got absolutely eviscerated 41-0 by those Louisville Cardinals in the final game of the season, the Commonwealth Cup, and Kentucky fans were just like, no more. And basketball wasn't winning. And so football became an even bigger distraction than what it normally is in the bluegrass. And Mitch Barnhart and company got it done. And Mitch Barnhart is the longest tenured AD in the SEC now, I believe, for a reason.
I think Scott nailed it. I don't think this is an immediate turnaround change. I think they struggle a little bit year one with Will Stein being a first-year head coach and having to cut his teeth in the SEC. But he is one of the most dynamic play callers, play designers in college football, one of the most efficient play callers on first and second down to get you in a third manageable situation. I like the hire. I do think it's going to take – I think maybe – year two, they're bowl eligible. Maybe year three, they're definitely bowl eligible. But I think it's a little bit of a slower build, and if any fan base is ready for that, it's probably Kentucky. Like, yeah. Put up yeah. points, be exciting. You know, the Mark Stoops era was built on being a hard nosed defense and being able to knock off top 10 teams like Ole Miss, like they did Ole Miss a year or two ago. But this new brand of football, I think, is going to excite a lot of Kentucky fans.
Yeah, I don't want to insult Kentucky fans here, but if this goes the way we all think it will, I think Will Stein is the next five-star head coaching prospect for the cycle, 2028-2029-ish cycle. A guy who's going to be next man up for the top 10 jobs when a Texas or a Michigan or a Florida State, one of those jobs where you can go win a national championship opens. If everything's on schedule, that's where I think Will Stein and Kentucky go. So, if you're an SEC program, you don't want to be labeled a stepping stone job. And then there's positives to having a Mark Stoops there that's content to be there for a decade. But there's also positives in the growth that will come if Will Stein succeeds, as we all think he will.
All right, staying in the SEC, I think Arkansas, Ryan Silverfield, he's a good football coach. I think this one doesn't get the fans super excited and has me a little – this is like a – all right, we got a good football coach. We're playing a really good league. Are we upgrading here? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Memphis was one of the top spenders in the American and never made the conference championship game. Did a lot of winning, but never seriously contended for a conference championship under Ryan Silverfield. Arkansas is a program that's trying to win a national championship in baseball, trying to win a national championship in basketball, and has a football program that hasn't had a winning record in the SEC since 2015 and has had three 0-8 seasons since then. And including most recently this past one, and now asked to have a ninth SEC game added to its plate moving forward.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by this hire. I've spent some time with Ryan Silverfield. We've written at length about him on Scoop, done some podcasts with him. I love his journey. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was the youngest ever high school head coach in the state of Georgia at the age of 23. That's crazy town. But it's not just up to Silverfield and who he hires. And he's much like Summerall, not just taking everything lock, stock, and barrel from Memphis. He's recognizing, again, that he had great people who helped him find success and have the potential to land the Arkansas job after they couldn't close with Alex Golish, that he's got to continue to challenge himself and find more people from around the country that can help bring Arkansas back up. All of that will not matter if the Arkansas administration, starting with Hunter Yurecek, doesn't commit more resources to Arkansas football, doesn't help fundraise more money for Arkansas mm-hmm. football, doesn't stop taking money away from Arkansas football to give to Arkansas baseball, as we reported a couple of weeks ago. All of those things have to happen. Talk about alignment. It's needed at Arkansas more than anywhere else in the SEC right now. Auburn wants to win. You never question that. Right now it does not, or has not, from the outside looking in and talking to people all over that building, felt like Arkansas is truly invested in winning in football.
This is the one that I'm probably least excited about in the SEC. I wasn't a Ryan Silverfield pound the table guy when he was elevated at Memphis. I think it's a lot easier to keep the ball rolling when you've got, you know, guys like Justin Fuente and Mike Norvell that did a really nice job at Memphis, and you can kind of continue that. At Arkansas, you're coming in and rebuilding from the ground up. And in a lot of ways, there's a lot more similarities between Ryan Silverfield and Sam Pittman. You've got two likable former O-line coaches that, you know, that there's just a lot more similarities than there are differences there to move the needle. So it's not a hire that's going to excite the fan base. And it's also not a hire that I think is going to drum up the big donors that Arkansas needs. They're going to need results on the field in order to get that to flip. But I do think he's made some good offensive and defensive coordinator hires. I don't think this is going to be go down as one of the better hires of the cycle. It seems like it's when Arkansas was rolling offensively, Kendall Briles was there, and they did some of the deep choice wide split stuff. I think that the hire of Alex Golish would have really gone really well there. A return to that. And for them to kind of have to pivot to Ryan Silverfield, I don't think is going to excite a ton of Arkansas fans.
All right, let's close out the SEC. Lane goes to LSU. Ole Miss says Pete's our guy. Y'all know I think Pete Golding's a great football coach, fun guy, great guy, competitive dude. I like the move. I like the move. I'm here for feedback. You know, so John Bryce broke the news this morning for the world. John David Baker, new offensive coordinator, learned in the Lane system. Give me some feedback, JB. What do you think on this hire?
I like it because we know, talk about authenticity and selflessness. That's been what Pete Golding has displayed in the days since he was elevated into the head coaching role, even delaying his introductory press conference, as he said, to just continue focus on doing everything he could to help prepare this team for literally the biggest game and potentially the biggest set of games ever in Ole Miss football history. And I recognize that's the place where Arch Manning played and Johnny Vaught coach and all of that, but this is it. So he's been very smart with that. I think Ole Miss, most importantly, I feel like a broken record here. I apologize. The alignment, and you know it better than me, Scott, because you're Pulse in Oxford, but the alignment was there. Like, it was instant. As soon as Lane officially was gone, the money people said, we're keeping Pete. We're keeping the band together. We recognize we have a good thing. And that's why they went out and got John David Baker. He'd been at USC. Then he had been at Ole Miss, under mm-hmm. Weiss and under Lane and Benko OC. Now he's learned how to call plays completely on his own for two seasons at East Carolina in difficult circumstances, especially that first year with the head coach getting fired midway through Baker's first year ever as a full-time offensive play caller. Yet they still finished strong, went to a bowl game, had another great season this year. Considering the resources they have to work with, they're going to play Pitt in a bowl game. So I like this hire a lot. You know, Pete is unproven as a head coach. You're taking a risk there, but you're taking, I think, a calculated risk because the investment is already there. You don't have to, much like Doug just made a hell of a great point about Arkansas. People are going to want to see results first before truly investing into that football program. People believe they've already seen results through Pete Golding, and I think that makes a tremendous difference.
Pete, I mean, he did all that time of saving, you know, and then comes over to Ole Miss and has found home. You know, his wife's from there. He played Delta State right there. He's happy as can be. This is all he wants to do is just coach ball and be a dude at Ole Miss. He's thrilled and he's fully invested.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to like this as a reporter, but I absolutely loved when Pete Golding came out and said that he was going to cancel his introductory press conference. It was like, there's been enough attention laid to one person at the Ole Miss football program in the past month. So let's not talk about me. Let's talk about these players. They're the ones who got us here to this moment. So let's celebrate them. And but what is that an easy win? Sure. And is it going to mean anything if the Tulane game is tied at halftime? Absolutely not. But I still think it shows a lot of emotional intelligence and for Pete to take that easy win. And being able to out-scheme people defensively is not really going to scale to being the Ole Miss head coach, but being able to lead people and read the room and emotional intelligence, that's going to scale. So I thought it was a great move.
I agree. I loved Pete Golding, I think, was saying on one of the college football playoff calls, like, listen, I don't do yoga. I just coach football. Like, I feel like that's what Ole Miss needs right now. Like, that type of authenticity, that type of, like, no BS, don't look at me. Like, in a lot of ways, the opposite of Lane Kiffin. And I think Pete Golding is going to be an absolute breath of fresh air there.
Yeah, you know, there are times, and I think Pete will see this and he'll learn this real quickly. So he's going to get through the playoffs and he is fully focused on coaching football. Once the playoffs end, hopefully with the national championship, right, he can take a little time and say, all right, I'm a head coach now. I did this with Saban, did this with Lane. I saw what they did. There are things a head coach does that are very different than just coaching football, so to speak. And so he'll get there, you know. I like the move. All right, so Ole Miss promotes Tulane. Summerall leaves Tulane after a search. They promote Will Hall. Will Hall had been there with Willie Fritz as the offensive coordinator for a couple of seasons, and then Summerall brought him back in. The players love him. The coaching staff loves him. It is a known commodity. Yeah, he was really good in the D2 world as a head coach. His run at Southern Miss, if you talk to him, and JB, I know you did some great reporting with him over the past year or so, he didn't have the resources at Southern Miss. And he's like, hey, Tulane's like, yo, we got the resources. We are filling this place. We got more people saying we want to be part of Tulane athletics, Tulane football. You've never seen a revival like what's happened uptown New Orleans. It's been a long time since people wanted to go to a Tulane football game. So they're like, hey, it ain't broken. Let's keep rocking. Yeah.
I was just going to say, and if Conference USA has, or the Sun Belt, some parts of it, those teams of that ilk from where Southern Miss was in the 90s, the early 2000s, the 2010s, if some of those leagues have now become like shopping at Five Below, Southern Miss has been doing so on a Dollar General budget. Like, it's been really, really, really badly behind, and they've been really hamstrung there. And don't forget that COVID coincided with Will being at Southern Miss as well. He does still have that 7-6 record at Southern Miss, and the program, I think Southern Miss's only bowl win thus far this decade. They've got a chance to change that thanks to the great first year work of the now departed Charles Huff. But he feels like he's learned a ton. It's very similar to another hire we're going to talk about. Billy Napier has made it clear to him. Failing has helped him learn so much that he is adamant he is going to be a hell of a lot better coach. And then speaking directly with Will Hall, both this summer and in recent weeks. I know that he certainly feels that way. And again, you referenced it, known commodity in the community. He will work that community. He will try. The Tulane has devoted increased resources to that football program. Will Hall will try to get it to be even more increased resources for that program. And he knows what works. He's seen it under two different head coaches there.
Yeah, I think the development guys from Tulane are all about this. They love this hire. The development team's like, we can fundraise based on Will. All right, go for it. All right, let's talk Napier real fast. Napier gets James Madison after Chesney goes to UCLA. JB, give me some thoughts real fast on JMU hire.
Again, he's thinking a bit outside of the box. He's trying to go hire Cam Akin. Still the most fascinating story I think I've ever heard of, that ETSU was not only going to allow it, but was excited, thought it was great for their program that Cam Akin was going to go and be a consultant for Ole Miss, his former employer, for the duration of Ole Miss's playoff run. He was not leaving employment at ETSU. He was staying ETSU's offensive coordinator while going and being a special senior super secret offensive consultant for Ole Miss. Both schools cleared it with NCAA compliance. It was all set to go. Billy Napier called and said, hang on, dog, I might have a job for you. So we'll see if that gets done. I think it's going to happen. You guys know, because I've been saying it on this podcast for 2 to 3 years, I'm an ardent believer that James Madison has every opportunity in the world to be the East Coast version of Boise State and what Boise State has been this entire century. They're motivated by that, especially now having seen success from Cignetti and from Chesney, and they were going to up Chesney's salary to get him to stay. Had that been an option, you know, a feasible option, they're very well aware of their pecking order. The fan support there is tremendous. They're motivated to fundraise more. I think Napier's got a great chance.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that James Madison had a replicable formula that worked for them in picking the up-and-coming East Coast FCS head coach. And then they went away from that with Billy Napier. So I'm not going to sit here and say whether it was the right or wrong move. None of us know. But if this move ends up failing, it'll be pretty easy to second guess that one.
I think to Napier's credit, number one, I think it has the potential to be a really awesome redemption story right along the likes of Will Hall. But I think when you talk about the resources that JMU has, it has arguably the most beautiful campus in America, just a great football area in Virginia. I almost wonder if they broke the mold in bringing Billy Napier there, because Billy Napier, after his experience at Florida, just doesn't have a taste for, you know, Power Four football. Like, this is a place you can go, you can be really happy, you can continue to raise your family, you can win a bunch of football games, you can, you know, maybe have a statue built of you at the end of the day after having a couple guys leave for Power Four opportunities. He doesn't need a Power Four opportunity anymore. He's got that taste in his mouth from Florida, and it's obviously not a great taste in his mouth. I could see Billy Napier spending a long, long time there and winning a bunch of football games.
Doug, I would like to borrow some of your spy equipment, because I'm told almost verbatim those are the conversations that Billy Napier's had with people in recent weeks. Like, he really realizes that G5 is where it's supposed to be, that there's a lot to personal happiness, that there's a lot to work-life balance. There's also, again, a lot to learning from your mistakes, and sometimes the mistake is saying yes.
Amen. Good stuff, Gus. I really had no idea that the campus was that beautiful. I need to get there and see it.
It's awesome. It bisects I-81 north and south going up through Virginia, just right on the corridor there, about midway between the Tri-Cities and Washington, D.C. So literally the campus expands to both sides of the interstate. You've got like baseball facilities and softball and soccer over here, and you've got the football facility and other things on the west side of the interstate. So it is cool, especially in fall when the leaves are changing and it's in the Shenandoah Valley. It's pretty dope.
Sweet. One of those hires, the guy's a great football coach, so Bob Chesney, right, going East Coast to West Coast, going to UCLA. To me, Bob's a great football coach. There's some risk in this hire. The ability to recruit – I don't know if y'all know. The old head coach told us. This is in Los Angeles.
Whoa.
The ability to recruit there – I realize recruiting has changed with the money involved and the money being above board. So we'll see. The guy can coach, so I'm not knocking that in any way. I just need to see him be able to get all the dudes that you need to compete in the Big Ten going back up to the Midwest. You know, so we'll see.
It's going to be
interesting. Yeah, I mean – Oh, go ahead,
Doug. I really think it'll be interesting to see what his staff looks like. Coming from all the way on the other coast, you need some guys that are tied into California and the junior colleges and the Arizona junior college system and be able to run L.A. and California and the Pacific Northwest. So his staff is going to be critical to his success. It's not a, hey, bring your whole staff from JMU over type situation. He's going to have to retool and refocus, I think, a little bit in order to have some success there. And I don't know if he's the type of he seems pretty humble. I don't know if he's got the type of personality that's going to that wants to go nose to nose with a USC for the same type of recruits and a Lincoln Riley and high powered offense and that kind of stuff. So the verdict's out for me on that one.
Yeah. I like the hire because here's what matters. It's a difficult job, and you wonder who can do it. Well, Bob Chesney believes he can do it, and that's a heck of a good place to start. I think he's very well aware of how challenging it's going to be. I think that he has the charisma and the self-belief and swagger that he will go in there and get it done. He's not, in my opinion, going to be afraid to pick a verbal fight with Lincoln Riley and USC, even though he's at UCLA, which is obviously California Los Alamitos, but he's going to punch above his weight because that's all he knows how to do. So I'm very intrigued by the staff that he puts together. I also hope that UCLA people that told him during the process, no, we're committed. We're upping NIL. We're changing revenue share. We're going to give you more resources than the recent guys have had. We're committed to all that. If they keep their word, I think his juice will resonate in Hollywood, and I think that he will have UCLA much more competitive and with the chance for some big upsets. And they might only be a 7-5 team or something in a couple of years, but they're going to put some scares into people.
Yeah, the parallels I see most clearly from my chair is Brian Harsin to Auburn. It's a successful G5 head coach at a great perch that you can win 10 games a year for the next 20 years up and leaving, going cross country. Not to say that it's going to end that way, but that's the track I see it on. And to John's point, you have to make UCLA football matter to people within the university and outside the university. It's very easy to pretend that UCLA football just doesn't even exist. So I have to think Chesney believes he can make UCLA football matter. And if it does, then yeah, you're not going to go win the Big Ten every single year, but you can be competitive.
Very good stuff. All right, let's go up the coast. So we'll go to Cal first, just like UCLA's money does. Tosh is the new head coach. Tosh loves Cal. He's, a player. I wasn't sure over the past few years. I thought Tosh was ready for another head coaching opportunity at Cal with Ron Rivera there. I mean, you've got grizzled veteran, has done it all. Giving him some guidance, I like that pairings. Actually, I think this is a very good hire for Cal.
Yeah, it's hard
to think. Yeah, my thought – go ahead, Doug.
Sorry, Zach. It's hard to think of Cal making a better hire fit-wise. Like, it's someone that knows the area really well, that I think will work really, really well with Ron Rivera. You're going to need to be tough defensively to have any type of success there. So for a lot of reasons, I like it. And to be honest, if I'm Tosh, there's very few opportunities that you leave Oregon that has all the resources in the world for. And when your alma mater calls, like you've got to pick up that call and listen to what they have to say. So Tosh probably knows a lot of stuff there that obviously we don't know. So I think ultimately it's a good hire. Again, I think it's one of those jobs that's going to take 2 or 3 years before they turn the corner. I don't think it's an immediate plug and fix type situation.
No, but I think it was important that Cal telegraphed even before dismissing Justin Wilcox that it had secured the recommitment that Zach so eloquently wrote about of – Sagapoletele as their quarterback of the future. And so because of that, I think that you could get Tosh Lapoy, a guy who, as my understanding, was approached by multiple SEC schools about returning to that conference as a defensive coordinator before he got the Cal, the inside track to the Cal job. So I think because he knew he had that quarterback to build around, because he has dominated recruiting on that side of the country like nobody I can remember in the last 10 to 15 years, I think all of those things, if Cal, again, it boils down to how much the university cares and how much they say they care and then show they care with actual investments.
And my thought is not Cal related, but one of the overarching storylines we're seeing in this cycle is guys that are staying with their current teams through playoff runs. And obviously Chesney and Summerall are doing that, but more than likely they're going to be done within 2 weeks. At Oregon, you have both coordinators taking first-time head coaching jobs. At Ohio State, you got that as well. And all those programs are planning on continuing to play football more than a month from now. And I think it's easy to say, yeah, I'm going to do both, and not a whole lot of sleep. I think it's going to be hard for each of those three guys to pull that off in practice, particularly once you get to the semifinal rounds and potentially the championship game and you've got the portal open at your school. And you're going to have to make overarching major decisions without a whole lot of time to sit there and think about it. And Dan Lanning did it at Oregon, but that was a different time. And you played TCU in the national championship game. And frankly, you could have not game planned at all at Georgia and they would have won that game. So when it's January 7th and you've got a court, I mean, Cal is going to expect to have Tosh Lapoy's presence, whether physically or electronically. Same for Kentucky, same for South Florida. You're going to have to make decisions one way or the other. And you're also going to be you're going to be loyal to both places. So how they manage that, if I'm the head coaches at Ohio State and Oregon, I need to have a good plan in place. Like, hey, we're going to have these coordinators, but we need to put their duties onto other people. Because they're going to have split loyalty and there's no way around it.
Tosh, getting there, taking all the pictures, signing, all those things, and buying a commercial plane ticket to Hawaii to go see the quarterback. Strong move. Maybe crazy, but strong move. Reminds me of Ed Ogeron. I think it's awesome. All right, gentlemen, we got 10 minutes left and we got to jump off this thing. We move up to down to Stanford, honestly. Tabita, this was Andrew Luck's guy, right? When Andrew got to Stanford, Tabita was there, stayed with him, with him in the NFL. This is what Andrew Luck wanted. We'll see how it goes.
I think that's the key. This is from talking to a number of people. This is overwhelmingly Andrew Luck's call. And sure, I think other people on the search committee very much wanted to go in the direction of Jim Mora Jr. Felt just that experience was going to be key with where the program was. And I was told that Andrew Luck said, I appreciate your input. We're going to hire Tavita. And, you know, look, can't second guess him yet because it hasn't not worked. And Frank Reich had that team, you know, decently competitive under impossible circumstances all year and certainly got them to play hard every single game of the year. And that was Andrew Luck's move. And Andrew Luck has secured the largest gift in the history of Stanford athletics. So he's got a lot of equity, but he put it all on the banknote that is Tavita Pritchard.
Yeah, I mean, this is the longest coaching search in this cycle at, eight plus months. So I think you kind of assume Andrew Luck would spend that time in the lab and come out with a name that no one expected because he recruited him off the books for a long time or did a lot of research. And he's got the stuff that scaled like, really, him? Okay, yeah, I see it. Instead, he hired the most obvious guy that anyone would have chosen that had 10 minutes. Hey, you have 10 minutes to choose a chance to stand for football coach. Who's he going to be? Tavita Pritchard.
I think we talked about that search right away. I was like, it's going to be Tavita. I mean, like day one, I was like, I mean, it's probably going to be Tavita, honestly. I mean, that's Andrew Luck's guy. Mm-hmm. And there we are. All right, let's keep this thing moving. Michigan State. Sorry, Doug. Michigan State, Pat Fitz. They swap out. So, Jonathan Smith, there was just no juice at all. They had to make that move. pull Pat Fitz out, and everybody's like, let's go. I think there's a lot of joy in East Lansing. Give me your thoughts, Doug.
Yeah, there is a lot of joy in East Lansing. I think Fitz has hit the ground running. I know he's trying to build a staff, but was in meetings last Friday with the Coaches Association here in Michigan, and Fitz popped in just to say hi and introduce himself. That simple 10-minute introduction went a long way with the state's high school coaches that really didn't really feel the love from Jonathan Smith and his staff. And, you know, we talk about coaches going from one coast to the other. That was Jonathan Smith going from Oregon, plugging into East Lansing, and it didn't get the traction that a lot of people wanted. Fits in a lot of ways. Number one, we've talked about, you know, being genuine. Like, there's not a more genuine person in the coaching profession than Pat Fitzgerald. And I think in this profession, a lot of times you can talk to guys on the recruiting trail. They're one guy, but when you go have a beer with them at the bar, they're a completely different guy. And, you know, that hat comes off and you see a different dude. Pat Fitz is the same dude in the office that he is having a beer with you at night. And I think that is really appreciated in East Lansing. That's who Mark D'Antonio was. He was the same dude wherever he went, whatever situation he was in. He was authentic. He was himself. That's what Michigan State is getting with Pat Fitzgerald. Also a guy that, you know, spent, 17 years at Northwestern, so he knows the lay of the land. He knows the Big Ten really, really well. I think this is a great hire for Michigan State. I think it's you know, the best you could expect at this point in the coaching cycle. I think it is an absolute home run hire for the Spartans.
I agree with you. He needs to get his staff right to have some juice. You know, his staff was a little old at Northwestern, a little inexperienced, actually. They had some old and some young. He needs to get the staff just right. All right, guys, I got to keep us moving. K-State flips from Kleiman to Colin Klein. Feels awesome. Chris was great. Chris is a great human, great ball coach. It had just run its time, and he decided, hey, it's time for me to step out. I'm going to check out a little bit. Colin is in. Let's go, right?
Yeah, it's an intriguing hire for sure. You certainly know that it's curated to be the perfect storybook homecoming, first ever head coaching job for Optimus Klein and his chance to return home and take K-State to that next level. He knows what K-State was when he was there. He's also coming from Texas A&M, which has always been willing to write any check, no matter the cost, and no matter whether it meant a single win or not. Just ask Jimbo Fisher and $76 million. So he's going from one extreme to not quite the complete opposite extreme, but to use another shopping analogy, he's going from Saks Fifth Avenue to Dillard's. So there's some adjustments there.
Yeah, we all hope when you go coach your alma mater that it works out and then you leave there as an old man one step below God. But quite often it doesn't work out that way. And suddenly your home is – you're not welcome there and your persona, they want nothing to do with you. See Scott Frost, Nebraska. And Frost brought that on himself with a lot of the choices he made in Nebraska that I don't think Colin Klein will make. But, for Klein's sake, I hope it works out.
All right, a little bit shorter. We all talked about James Franklin a bunch. Virginia Tech hires James Franklin. Feels like a very good fit. Love him hanging on to Brent Pry, bringing Brent Pry back in, the humility associated there. His staff's going to look a lot like his Penn State staff with, you know, out Knowles, bring Pry back in, Ty Howe leading the offense. I suspect several more Penn State guys, once they get noticed that they're out of Penn State, will come to Virginia Tech. Quick thoughts.
I'd love to be in that first meeting when Brent Pry comes back. I'm like, hey, guys, what'd I miss?
He's not going to be like that. He's like, hey, guys, I'm here to work. He's yeah. Got Bud Foster lore is coming there, hopefully. All right, moving right along. Oklahoma State hired – we got to be quick. Oklahoma State hires Eric Morris. He's bringing his whole squad to town. We love to hire.
Yes.
Yes, very good, especially because as we've talked for weeks – when you say bringing the whole squad, that's Drew Mestemaker and any number of other players. They've got a baller, a little wide receiver that I think has a chance to join that crew as well. They'll hit the ground running. The Big 12 is really still pretty wide open. There's going to be considerable personnel turnover at Arizona State. So I like the hire a lot.
Yeah, I mean, they're the first back-to-back winless team in the Big 12 since the Kansas is at its bottom. So I'm not going to predict any championships, but six wins I don't think is off the table very, very soon in Stillwater.
Gentlemen, quick thoughts. Huff at Memphis?
Yeah.
I mean, he did it at Marshall. He came down, brought some dudes. Defensive staff played out of their mind, or coached out of their minds. They're bringing him back up to Memphis. Feels like a good hire to me.
Yeah, three jobs in 3 years for Huff, but I think it'll work out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his AFCA talk last year. I think Huff's a great hire there.
All right, Jim Ward at Colorado State. I like that hire very much.
I like it a lot.
I like it a lot.
I think it's and Colorado State. I don't give them enough credit. Great facilities, great fan support. Fort Collins is a freaking killer town. And Jim Mora has a new leash on life. He'll probably start proving Stanford and some other people wrong.
Heartline USF.
Love it. Is he going to call plays there? Do we know?
He said he's not so sure. It depends on his staff. I suspect Brian is going to need some help from his agent to pull together the staff. I'm not sure Brian knows all the guys and he's ready to hire yet. So it would be interesting to see how his staff comes together.
I would advise him to not call plays and be a full-time head coach and not a part-time play caller. But I, on the surface, I love this hire.
I suspect that's what he's going to wind up doing.
Yeah, just recruit right. Full-time, Brian Hartline. Just recruit full-time. You'll be fine.
Jimmy Rogers in one phone call becomes Iowa State's head coach.
Yeah, I was texting with a coach that was planning on being a candidate and mentioned some other guys. And I was like, dang, this is a good list. And next thing you know, Jimmy Rogers is the head coach. So I forget that search.
All right, Neil Brown's in North Texas. Thoughts?
I like it. I think that Neil used this year off wisely. I think from talking to people, much like Billy Napier, he feels really reinvigorated by what he's learned and what didn't go well. And I think he's expanded kind of his offensive horizons. And I think that this is a great opportunity for him to hit the ground running and to keep North Texas rolling. Zach has a much better pulse really than anyone on that program. So I'll defer to him.
Yeah, I think high floor, lower ceiling than what you had under Eric Morris. You got to get better on the lines because you got bullied by South Florida and Tulane.
Gentlemen, there are more hires. We just can't get to them right this minute. We got to go be Football Scoop. Appreciate everybody listening. We'll be back hopefully in a couple of days. See you soon.